Hey friends, did you know that you can come hang out with me in real life? That's right. The Work In Podcast and Savage Grace Coaching makes its home in a boutique studio space called The Loft Yoga and Wellness in historic downtown Spring Valley, Ohio. This hidden gem of the Miami Valley is nestled in between Dayton, Columbus, and Cincinnati. As a part of my mission to bring a legacy of resilience through movement, each month you can join me for a hike on the bike trail, followed by a free trauma-informed vinyasa class back at the studio on Main Street. Go to savagegracecoaching.com to see the calendar and join my newsletter, A Yoga Life on Main Street, to stay up to date on all the latest studio news, events, and gossip. And now, on to this week's episode. It's time to stop working out and start working in. You found the Work In Podcast for fitpreneurs and their health conscious clients. This podcast is for resilient wellness professionals who want to expand their professional credibility, shake off stress, and thrive in a burnout proof career, with conversations on the fitness industry, movement, nutrition, sleep, mindset, nervous system health, yoga, business, and so much more. I'm your host, Erica Thomas. I'm a resilience coach and fitpreneur offering an authentic, actionable, realistic approach to personal and professional balance for coaches in any format. The Work In is brought to you by Savage Grace Coaching, bringing resilience through movement, action, and accountability. Private sessions, small groups, and corporate presentations are available now. Visit savagegracecoaching.com to schedule a call and get all the details. Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to The Work In. If there's one thing that every woman I know complains about, it's sleep deprivation. After all, there is a reason they use it for torture. I mean, enhanced interrogation. Sleep disturbance. Every once in a while, a night or two here and there, it's not a problem. More than three nights a week, and it might be. Now, I thought it was just me, but apparently waking up between 2 and 4 a.m. every single night like clockwork is pretty common for women, especially in perimenopause and menopause. So today, we are going to take a look at why that happens and what you can do about it. Now, sleep is affected by almost everything you do from the moment you wake up in the morning. But today we want to focus on three specific pieces to the sleep puzzle and what you can naturally do to influence those things. Specifically, we're looking at three sleep levers: stress, hormones, and blood sugar. Now, sleep is controlled by your circadian rhythms. Those are your internal clocks. Pretty much every system in your body has its own clock, and those are typically set by the amount of light we get or don't get at particular times of the day. It's those clocks that then trigger the release of certain hormones at certain times. For example, you get a boost of cortisol in the morning based on the sunlight. And then sunlight then turns down melatonin so you can fully wake up. Generally, that's how it works anyway. And then when it's time to sleep, what's supposed to happen is the sun goes down. And as the sun goes down, melatonin rises. That's your sleepy time hormone. And then insulin and cortisol are going to drop. And then you fall into this blissful sleep of the innocent all through the night, supposedly. Except for the perimenopausal and menopausal women out there who ping awake somewhere between 2 and 4 a.m. like clockwork, and not just the normal wake up and roll over and kick the dog off the bed. No. I'm talking wide awake in the middle of the night with the weight of the world racing through your head. Not cool. According to my sources, which you will find links to in the show notes, stress, natural hormone fluctuations, and blood sugar all play a role in how we sleep and our sleep cycles. And just like everything else in the wild world of women, all of those things are magnified during menopause. So let's start with this hormone piece, the big pink elephant in the room. During perimenopause and into menopause, all of our sex hormones fluctuate. Most of us only really think about estrogen here, but it's actually progesterone that is the major player in our sleep quality. Now, lower levels of progesterone affect levels of GABA. Now, stay with me here. You may or may not have heard of GABA. GABA stands for gamma-aminobutyric acid. But for short, we just say GABA. And GABA is the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter in the brain. Basically, it's a relaxation neurotransmitter. And it helps with sleep. It reduces anxiety and tension in the body. The higher the GABA levels are, the more relaxed you can be. But more specifically, GABA is the thing that helps you stay asleep. It's not necessarily the piece that helps you get to sleep. The thing is, GABA and progesterone are connected in a way. GABA, or high enough levels of GABA, I should say, needs a certain level of progesterone. So when that's not there, GABA isn't supported, and it's harder to get into that slow wave and REM sleep that we need to consider our night's sleep to be a high-quality night of sleep. So hormone fluctuations for women are completely natural, and we experience them basically from the time we get our first period all the way through postmenopause, sometimes for years afterwards. They are normal for us, right? And we can support those natural fluctuations of hormones when we understand some of those mechanisms and connections. And this GABA connection is one of those. So we can then make some choices that will support higher levels of GABA in the presence of lower levels of progesterone as those levels change. So one of the ways that we can do that is by how we eat and certain foods that contain building blocks for GABA. Now, there's no particular food that has GABA in it per se, but they do contain the building blocks for GABA because GABA is a neurotransmitter. So some of the things that have those building blocks are tea, like green tea, black tea, and oolong tea all have building blocks for GABA. Berries, tomatoes, potatoes, things like noni fruit, which honestly I have never eaten before. I'm not sure what that is. Lentils, wild-caught fish, and grass-fed beef all have the building blocks for the neurotransmitter GABA. And then we can include foods that are very rich in B6, like salmon, lean chicken, tofu, potatoes, again, bananas, avocado, spinach, garlic, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts. Now, as I'm reading off these lists of different kinds of food, what we need to wrap our head around is that our gut health is particularly important for GABA. It's the microbiome, or the microflora that lives in your gut that synthesize GABA. And experts believe that GABA then is communicated to the brain or is sent to the brain via the gut-brain axis, that is your vagus nerve. And because of that, all of the foods that I just listed off, and then anything else that you can do to support your gut health, are going to support that GABA level for you. So there's some other things that are really great for that gut microflora and the microbiome. Those are fermented foods that are already rich in beneficial bacteria, things like kimchi and sauerkraut and kefir, and in different forms, like including coconut water kefir. And along those lines, of course, we have probiotics as a supplement. Those can help. But the more green leafy vegetables that you can eat, the more variety of food that you can eat, all of those things, specifically whole foods, fruits and vegetables, those things, those bring those prebiotics into the gut, which supports that entire ecosystem within yourself. Now, speaking of supplements, there's a couple of particular supplements that are associated with higher levels of GABA, and those are magnesium, L-theanine, and taurine. And so I would do a little bit more research if you're interested in those particular supplements in regards to GABA. Magnesium is an excellent supplement for sleep in certain levels. Many, many people, not just female people, but many people, especially in North America, are deficient in magnesium. L-theanine is also a piece of that puzzle for sleep. And so if you can find a supplement that has both magnesium and theanine, L-theanine in it, you can kind of create a really wonderful calming cocktail at the end of the evening that can really help sleep. Now, what are some other things that boost GABA? Meditation and yoga are both science-backed GABA boosters. There are several studies, and you know, a lot of them are very small studies, I will admit, but they are double blind, all of those good scientific rules that apply that show actual increases in GABA levels in yoga participants after a 60-minute session versus a comparison group. So that a particular study compared yoga participants and a group of people who just read for an hour, and the yoga participants increased their GABA levels by 27% after a 60-minute session versus those readers. And in another study that compared yoga participants to walking, both groups either practicing yoga or walking for 60 minutes a few times a week, I think in the study it was like three times a week over 12 weeks, those yoga participants showed an increase in GABA levels and greater improvements in mood and anxiety than the walkers did. And that's significant, right? Because besides exercise, now we're going to talk about exercise specifically in a little bit. It's not only exercise. There was something specific about yoga itself that raised GABA levels and improved that mood and anxiety. So some things just to keep in mind. Even if you're not into yoga, there are pieces of yoga that we can pull out that can give us the same kind of increases for GABA. So more GABA basically equals more relaxation and a better night's sleep. That's basically what these things are levers for. Now, besides boosting GABA, what we also want to look at is eliminating the things that kind of drop our GABA levels. Okay, so besides a lower level of progesterone that we know is associated with the lower levels of GABA, there are certain behaviors and things that we consume that also lower levels of GABA. So smoking will lower your GABA levels. Alcohol lowers your GABA levels. And it pains me to say it, but too much caffeine also lowers your GABA levels, which makes sense because caffeine is a stimulant. So if you are ingesting a stimulant, then the neurotransmitters that are supposed to relax and calm the nervous system are really going to have a hard time. So keep that in mind. Now, I practice yoga, so maybe that balances out my love for coffee, but who knows? Now, the other piece to this is high levels of stress will kill your GABA levels, right? So this is going to naturally take us into the second lever that we're talking about as far as sleep maintenance and sleep quality through perimenopause and menopause, and that is managing our stress levels. So this is probably number one on our list of culprits for sleep disruptors. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, every once in a while, it's not a problem. It's when your stress levels reach chronically high toxic levels every single night or multiple nights a week, 3, 4, 5 nights a week that interrupt your sleep levels over time. That's where we get into trouble. Normally at nighttime, melatonin, which you may know is your sleepy time hormone, your melatonin levels will naturally increase and your cortisol, which is your stress hormone, will naturally become lower. And that will allow you to rest, to fall asleep naturally and get a good night's sleep. Now, if you're under acute stress or you've been under this chronic stress for a long time, you may notice that you tend to wake up between 2 and 4 a.m. or have difficulty falling back to sleep. Sometimes this can also be experienced as waking up just way earlier than you would naturally want to, like 4 or 5 a.m. This happens because cortisol has this natural rhythm in the body. It's a pattern of highs and lows that is influenced by the light, like we mentioned before. It's also influenced by your behavior patterns and changes in your hormone balance. All of these things are connected and related. And higher cortisol at certain times of the night can and will decrease those deep, slow wave sleep patterns. And that in turn shortens your sleeping time or interrupts that sleeping time. Now we need cortisol. It plays a role in many areas of the body, including controlling blood sugar levels, regulating your body's sleep and wake cycle, ding, 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 managing how the body utilizes carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. It reduces inflammation, and it plays a role in controlling your blood pressure. We don't want to get rid of our cortisol. We just want to tone it down at night so that we can stay asleep. Sadly, one of the best ways to lower cortisol levels naturally is by lowering stress and getting a good night's sleep, which is exactly what you can't do if your cortisol levels are out of whack from chronic stress. So it's this crazy catch-22. But there are some very effective ways to calm the nervous system and down-regulate the nervous system that will lower cortisol. Some of those ways include guided meditations, plus progressive relaxation. That is one of my personal favorite guided meditation, this progressive relaxation where you contract the muscles in your body and then let go and release that contraction. Yoga nidra, and of course, eating a balanced diet that's full of all the stuff that I listed above, and including omega-3 fatty acids, which if you are eating enough fish, which most of us in the Midwest kind of struggle to do, you would naturally get those omega-3 fatty acids. But if you can't get those fish, or if you're vegan, or if you're concerned about mercury in those fish, maybe omega-3 fatty acid supplementation would be a better option. But those are some ways to affect that cortisol level from your plate and from your behavior. Those calming guided meditations before bed, before you sleep, and then also what you're eating during the day. Now, exercise can also help regulate cortisol. It does it during the day. So we want to be careful about when we are exercising in relation to when we are trying to go to sleep, because cortisol levels are naturally higher when you move, when you are exercising. And so if you think that cortisol is a player in your sleep cycles at night, one way to affect that is to shift your activity, your especially your high intensity activity, shift that to earlier in the day. And then some other things that some studies have shown to be effective with lowering cortisol are really simple things like connecting with friends, just simply going outside and having some fun, play, all of those things will lower cortisol at night. Now, the third and final piece to this sleeping puzzle is our blood sugar. Every time you eat, blood sugar rises. That's just natural because you're consuming food. And then in response to that, insulin comes online to remove that blood sugar from the blood and take it and store it for later in the liver and the fat cells. This is highly oversimplified, but that's basically what is happening. Cortisol also rises to help with that as well, to help with that blood sugar regulation. And if you eat or drink anything too close to bedtime, particularly if it's high carbohydrate or high in sugar, you may experience restless sleep or a very light sleep or waking up a couple of hours after falling asleep. And this is one of the reasons why wine and other alcohol isn't really recommended before bed, because it's typically pretty high in carbohydrates, high in sugar. The alcohol might help you get to sleep, but that sugar, that blood sugar response, is most likely going to wake you up later as the blood sugar levels start to drop. Now, the other piece to this food and blood sugar puzzle in relation to sleep is that higher insulin levels in the body tend to block melatonin production. And you need melatonin to be able to fall asleep, okay? Generally, it's better for your sleep cycles to give yourself 3 to 4 hours between your last meal of the day and bedtime, generally. Now, remember, I mentioned earlier that all of the systems of your body have their own circadian rhythms. That is true also of your digestive system and gut microbiome, as well as your brain and neurologic systems. If your gut has to spend all night digesting your last meal, it has less time to devote to orchestrating a sense of well-being and contentment. It does that through the neurotransmitters that microbiome is responsible for. And if the brain and body is overwhelmed with insulin all night long, it can't reach that slow wave and REM sleep. And it can't do the nightly cleanup and memory backup that happen in certain areas of the brain during those sleep cycles. So controlling when your last meal of the day is and what is on your plate for that meal is one of the simplest changes that you can make to get a better night's sleep. Now, these three pieces to the puzzle for perimenopause and menopause, they really can apply to all people, but sleep is one of the most frustrating things that changes during our change. And so it is so crucial that we kind of elevate this, that we prioritize how well we are sleeping from the start so that we can kind of ease our way through these natural fluctuations, these natural energy changes over time. Now, I'm working on a new online course in the background here, as we speak, actually, that connects some of these dots for women of wisdom like you and me, and it will include natural ways to balance these hormones, ease anxiety and depression, demystify the pelvic floor, and really re-sanctify sensuality. You can join the waitlist for this metamorphosis, basically a menopause makeover, by going to savagegracecoaching.com/services and click on the Join the Waitlist button. This doesn't obligate you in any way. It simply gives you a front row seat when the doors open. And I would love to see you there. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I will see you next time on The Work In.